It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Guy Raz. And on this episode, we're asking questions and exploring ideas about what it means to endure.
I remember looking down and kind of measuring each pace by looking at the sort of graphics, you know, the logos and the writing and things on my skis. And watching the right ski binding, you know, slide up to the letter, whatever it is, A on the left ski, and thinking, okay, good. Good. So I was measuring progress in inches, good, like 6 inches of progress, and at the same time trying to not think about the fact that this was an 1,800-mile journey.
This was just a couple of years ago. Polar explorer Ben Saunders and his partner Tarka Lepinière were attempting an expedition no one had ever completed alive, to walk on skis from the coast of Antarctica to the South Pole and back. What do you have that the rest of us don't, like, to try to pull something like this off?
I don't know. I don't think I'm unique in any way. I was in the gym last week and I was doing a warm-up on a rowing machine, but I just set the clock for 5 minutes. And I remember, like, halfway through thinking, maybe I'll just do four. Like, this is really, really tough, you know? So I'm definitely not immune to that desire to kind of take it easy.
Today on the show, TED speakers who, for reasons of choice or necessity, have definitely not taken it easy, who keep going, who are resilient, who endure in the face of serious, sometimes life-changing adversity, people who made it through war and unimaginable environments, and in the case of Monica Lewinsky, one of the most publicized political scandals in living memory. But first, back to Ben Saunders and that expedition we mentioned. It was a journey that had never been completed. It's known as the Scott Expedition, and it was last attempted by an explorer named Robert Falcon Scott back in the early 1900s. Ben Saunders picks up the story from the TED stage.
It was a journey, an expedition in Antarctica, the coldest, windiest, driest, and highest altitude continent on Earth. It's a fascinating place. Some of you may know the story. Scott's last expedition, the Terra Nova expedition in 1910, started as a big team using ponies, using dogs, using petrol-driven tractors, dropping multiple pre-positioned depots of food and fuel, through which Scott's final team of five would travel to the pole, where they would turn around and ski back to the coast again on foot. Scott and his final team of five died on the return journey. No one's come close to that ever since. So this is the high watermark of human endurance, human endeavor, human athletic achievement in arguably the harshest climate on Earth. And of course, some strange and predictable combination of curiosity, stubbornness, and probably hubris led me to thinking I might be the man to try and finish the job.
When Ben and his partner Tarka set off from the coast of Antarctica in 2014, they were hauling sledges that weighed 440 pounds, or 200 kilos each. They walked on skis about a half a mile an hour. They had 900 miles to go until they reached the South Pole, which was only the halfway mark on their journey.
Perhaps the reason no one had attempted this journey until now, in more than a century, was that no one had been quite stupid enough to try. And while I can't claim we were exploring in the genuine Edwardian sense of the word, we weren't naming any mountains or mapping any uncharted valleys, I think we were stepping into uncharted territory in a human sense. We didn't go indoors for nearly 4 months. We didn't see a sunset either. It was 24-hour daylight. Living conditions were quite Spartan. I changed my underwear 3 times in 105 days. The lowest wind chill we experienced was in the minus 70s, and we had zero visibility, what's called whiteout, for much of our journey.
Yeah, I mean, you were just, like, moving at a snail's pace in those first few weeks. And what were you thinking during the day, during the walk? Like, what was on your mind? Were you thinking, were you daydreaming? Were you thinking about other things, or were you just...
Yeah, it was interesting. We would take it in turns to navigate. So we would do 45 minutes in front each and then change over. And then every hour and a half, so once we'd both done a session, we'd sit on the sledges and eat and drink, and then we'd carry on. And it was a real relief to change over and to follow, because we had blue jackets, and the fabric cover of the sledges was red, and the sledges themselves were yellow, so there was colour, stuff to look at. And it's hard to explain the sense of relief at being able to focus on something.
I mean, everything around you is white.
Yeah, pretty much. You can't even see the horizon. You can't see the ground. It's like being inside a ping pong ball.
Ben and Tarka's journey was supposed to take 105 days, and after 61 days, about on schedule, they made it to the halfway mark, the South Pole. Now, there's not much there. There's an airstrip and a permanent scientific base camp that's staffed year-round. And to get there, Ben and Tarka had walked, as we mentioned, 900 miles. And now, they had to walk 900 miles back. And what they did when they arrived at the South Pole reveals something about the single-mindedness, the discipline that they had to have to endure this journey. Because what they did at the South Pole was nothing.
I always knew we'd be pretty tired when we got there. So we arrived at the pole. We stayed outside. We just literally took some photographs by the pole. I phoned my mum, did some filming, and then turned around and walked off again. Yeah.
So you didn't stay there overnight or anything?
No, not at all. No,
you did not take a hot shower?
No, definitely not.
Did anybody there like come out and wave and say, hey, welcome?
We did. There were a few people there. We had, an official representative of the National Science Foundation came and welcomed us to the pole and said, would you like to come and have a tour? And we said, no, thank you, very kind. But we need to get back to the coast 900 miles away.
Because you were actually afraid that you might never want to leave. Or you could want to leave, but you'd never want to go back, walk back.
I think so, yeah. Up until that point, we'd had this we had to have this tunnel vision, absolutely single-minded focus on what we were doing. We hadn't sat in a chair for 2 months by that point. So to go inside, sit in an armchair, have a hot coffee would have been, just way too distracting.
It might be that endurance isn't about pushing through obstacles, but about knowing yourself well enough to find ways around those obstacles, or at least to make them less intimidating. So even as they pushed away from the South Pole, beginning their 900-mile trek back to the outer edge of the continent, they had to trick their minds in ways that allowed them to endure just a little further each day.
It's a weird paradox. In that most of the time, we tried to forget the actual goal because it seemed so intimidating, so overwhelming, trying to cover this huge distance when early on we're struggling to do 5 or 6 miles in a day. The knowledge that we would have to average, 18, 20 miles a day, I think, over the whole trip, just seemed unthinkable.
And this is where things get interesting. For years, I'd been writing glib lines in sponsorship proposals about pushing the limits of human endurance. But in reality, that was a very frightening place to be indeed. We'd had, before we got to the pole, 2 weeks of almost permanent headwind, which slowed us down. As a result, we'd had several days of eating half rations. We had a finite amount of food in the sledges to make this journey, so we were trying to string that out by reducing our intake to half the calories we should have been eating. As a result, we both became increasingly hyperglycemic. We had low blood sugar level day after day, and increasingly susceptible to the extreme cold. And it was very humbling indeed, as much as you might like to think, as I do, that you're the kind of person who doesn't quit, that you'll go down swinging. Hypothermia doesn't leave you much choice. You become pathetic. I remember feeling just wanting to lie down and quit. It was a peculiar feeling and a real surprise to me to be debilitated to that degree. And then we ran out of food completely.
Okay, for reasons that were unique to this particular expedition, running out of food, as Ben and Tarka did, was a huge failure. See, they were attempting to make this journey just as Robert Scott had. And so in explorer's terms, they were trying to do it unassisted, using only the food they could carry or that they'd stashed along the way. But when weather set them back, Ben and Tarka weren't going to make it to their next supply depot. So reluctantly, Ben agreed to call in a resupply plane with enough food to get them to the next checkpoint.
We were both really on the ragged edge, and I just decided we were pushing too far.
When that plane arrived with the food, do you remember something you ate that just it was just so memorable, it was so good?
Yeah, one of the most surreal things was a bottle of Coca-Cola and crackers with cream cheese and salmon. They sent us like smoked salmon from this place. Which is, I'm actually embarrassed saying this, thinking of the kind of hardships that Scott and Sheffield faced, the fact that we were there like feasting on smoked salmon, yeah, before we set off again.
That must have been like one of the best meals of your life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I remember Tarka saying, he said, "Don't tell my wife, but I think this is the happiest day of my life," when the plane turned up with the food. Yeah.
I don't regret calling for that plane for a second, but getting external assistance like that was never part of the plan. And it's something my ego is still struggling with. This was the biggest dream I've ever had, and it was so nearly perfect. But I'm also standing here saying, you know what? That cliche about the journey being more important than the destination, there's something in that. The closer I got to my finish line, that rubbly, rocky coast of Ross Island, the more I started to realize that the biggest lesson that this very long, very hard walk might be teaching me is that happiness is not a finish line. And that if we can't feel content on our journeys amidst the mess and the striving that we all inhabit, the open loops, the half-finished to-do lists, the could-do-better next times, then we might never feel it. A lot of people have asked me what's next. Right now, I'm very happy just recovering and in front of hotel buffets. But as Bob Hope put it, I feel very humble, but I think I have the strength of character to fight it. Thank you.
Ben Saunders, that expedition, his Scott expedition, broke the record for the longest human-powered polar journey in history by more than 400 miles. His entire talk and a second one we featured on the show before are both at TED.com. Coming up, more ideas about what it means to endure. I'm Guy Raz, and you're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR.